Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
A bunch of big takeaways in the NFL. Obviously, we have been talking a decent amount about Game 7 and the Dodgers storming back to win three straight against the Braves. I put up a question on Twitter, a poll question, as soon as the game ended and asked what was the worst situation out there in terms of toughest losses for the Braves or for the Atlanta Falcons. I'm sorry, Atlanta sports fans. What was worse, blowing a 28-3 Super Bowl lead or the Braves blowing a 3-1 NLCS lead? Tens of thousands of you have voted in this, and the Super Bowl is overwhelmingly winning the poll, 80% saying Super Bowl. But I really wonder how much of that has to do with football just being a lot more popular than baseball. Because to me, you only lose one football game. And granted, losing a 28-3 lead stinks, but the Braves only had to win one baseball game, and they lost three in a row. So you got opportunity after opportunity after opportunity in order to be able to advance to the World Series. Instead, you lose all three of those games. It's not like you lost three straight games against the Patriots. Now, the flip side, I guess, could also be the NLCS is not the World Series. So even if you go to the World Series, you're not guaranteed to win anything there, whereas you're in the Super Bowl, and so you win a championship if you win that game. Regardless, you can go vote in that if you would like. At Clay Travis is where you can vote. What an unbelievable. I think maybe this game won by Mookie Betts with the catch that he made on Freddie Freeman's would-be home run. And there are just so many plays you can go back over in any Game 7, certainly, and point to them and say, my God, that was pretty unbelievable. So we've been talking about Game 7. Also, we've been breaking down the NFL for you, a lot of different NFL storylines. And in particular, I would say this one stands out the most. I told you, coming into the NFL Sunday, that I thought Brady and the Bucks going up against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers was by far the best game on Sunday. We didn't get a great game because the Bucks defense came in and dominated, actually scored, what was it? The Packers scored the first 10, and then I think the Bucks scored 38 unanswered in order to win that game. But to me, this is two ships passing in the night. One of the biggest questions that we've had this season was going to be, who's going to win the breakup? Who's going to win the divorce? Is it going to be Tom Brady leaving New England and going down to play in Tampa Bay with his buddy Gronk? Or is it going to be Bill Belichick? And I think we're starting to get a pretty good read that the Patriots are, at best, an 8-8 caliber team. And I even think it's unlikely they're going to be able to get to 8-8, whereas there's pretty strong evidence that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, at this point, are definitely a playoff team. Right now, they would be the number one seed in the NFC. They would win their home game there. They wouldn't obviously be the number one seed in the NFC, but I'm saying they'd be the number one champ of the NFC South, so they would get a home playoff game. We'll see what happens with the Saints. But Brady, look, last Thursday when he had you knew that he was going to come out and play well, because when he was holding up four fingers and everybody was ridiculing him, one of the most reliable situations in sports has been Brady to bounce back from a bad performance. And so when you saw everybody mocking Brady, and Brady even getting in on the mockery himself and congratulating the Laker fans for the fourth championship of LeBron James using the four fingers, you knew that Brady was going to show up and play pretty well. And he did. But they didn't even need that much from Brady in general, because the Packers really kind of self-destructed and the defense of the Bucks is pretty solid. And I feel like this is not even really much of a challenge right now. Belichick and the Patriots looked really bad against the Denver Broncos. And partly I think that's because this COVID situation has knocked the Patriots out of their routine. The do your job is sort of defines the New England Patriot era. And it feels like with not being able to practice and all the other challenges associated with it, it feels like that kind of really jumped all over the Patriots this week. And credit to the Broncos, because the Broncos were one of the biggest underdogs out there in the NFL this week. And they went on the road, traveled across the country. Drew Locke, they weren't 100% sure how well he was going to play or if he was going to be able to play. I don't think there's any doubt that the Broncos are a different team with Drew Locke at quarterback. They're much better. But Cam Newton really kind of disappeared in this game. And I know they've been able to run him and have some success with him as a running quarterback. But in general, I'm kind of nervous about where the Patriots are going from here if I am a Patriot fan. And I think the answer is they're not going to make the playoffs. And if that's going to be the case, then Brady wins this divorce way, way more than Bill Belichick does. And that's been one of the big storylines that I'm kind of intrigued to see. The other couple of storylines that I would say played out and we learned a little bit about, first of all, in addition to that Bucks and Packers game, how about Tua getting out there and calling his family from the field after he got back onto the field for the first time since he broke his hip? We had the good fortune here in Nashville to be able to interact a little bit with Tua when he was training for the NFL. Trent Dilfer is here, and he was the sort of quarterback guru that was breaking everything down for Tua. And so we got to meet Tua's family, and my kids got to meet Tua and Jerry Jeudy for that matter. And Tua was just couldn't have been any nicer to him. And the same thing was true of all of Tua's family. So I know how close that Tagovailoa family is. And to see the way that they were all interacting was just super cool, with Tua getting back on the field like he did and calling his family. If you didn't see that video, Tua, it's been a long journey of almost a year since he broke his hip, and all the difficulty of rehabilitation and everything else to finally be back on the field, even if it was in mop-up duty for the win the Dolphins had over the Jets, was a pretty powerful moment, I think, in general. And just a super good kid from everybody that you talk to, Tua is. And his family was just, we got to meet him and hang out with him a little bit when they were here in Nashville. And they couldn't have been any kinder to my family. I had my boys there, to meet Tua during part of the training that he was going through for his combine. They couldn't have been any nicer. The Tagovailoa family in general, it's just hard not to root for him. And I know this is still Ryan Fitzpatrick's team, but I thought that moment of seeing Tua on the field calling his parents so that they could experience what it was like for him to be back on the field after everything that they went through and after all the challenges and all the stress and all the difficulty from that injury that he had back in November is pretty amazing. That moment was really pretty great. All right, when we come back, we'll dive into college football with Joel Klatt, talk about the big win for Alabama over Georgia. How good is Clemson? The Big Ten is returning. What does he expect to see from Ohio State? How about Nick Saban testing positive and then having five straight negatives after it? We will talk about all of that and more. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. This is the Monday edition of Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
He is the loathsome at Joel Klatt. Joel, I understand that some of our OutKick fans have been telling you that they love you on the show. First of all, they should first say, I know that you are the loathsome Joel Klatt, but I appreciate you going on with Clay Travis on OutKick. But is it a bittersweet moment when they say that they enjoy hearing you, but then you find out that they enjoy hearing you on my show?
Yes, I immediately list off other places where they can find any of my work just so that it's not here.
We're talking with Joel Klatt. All right, so we talked all offseason, and we've talked about this some on the show, about the importance of college football being played. You fought hard for it, tried to make it happen. And when you see and now are going to get to call the Nebraska-Ohio State game, and we're not that far from the Pac-12 coming back either. But do people even realize how much of a battle it was to get the Big Ten back where now the entire conference is going to be able to play this weekend?
I don't think people realize what low probability this all was, right?
Yeah.
I think that, and I think that's kind of what your point is. Let's just put it this way. You know, when we started getting into the July and early August, in particular, like middle July, I thought it was about a 99.5% chance that we were not going to have the Big Ten or the Pac-12. I thought that there was a decent chance, maybe 10% chance we would get. And this was at like my lowest point, right? Because you and I talked at this point, too, and I was like, I don't know, man. It does not look good. In particular, once you started getting some of those news reports of the Big Ten. So I don't think people appreciate exactly what we're about to see, how rare, I guess you could say, that it is. But, you know, I'm happy for these kids that they're going to get a chance to compete. And I think what strikes me now every time I do a game is that, Clay, what we've lost, and again, you know, I mean, the bros are out there in force. Every time one person tests positive, or if it's Saban, you know, they're all out there, or a high profile game gets postponed, and they're out there basically standing on a soapbox saying, I told you so. And I always want to say, like, well, what about the other 90% of the games that are going on? What about every one of these players that have opted into the season, right? Like, no penalty. They don't have to be there. And how about the zero players or coaches in college football that have been hospitalized? How about any of that? Like, does anyone want to do an article on that? Anybody at all? The fact that we're going to have Big Ten football, are there going to be challenges? Absolutely. Does anyone want to, like, when is that going to be celebrated and championed about these kids and what they're doing, what they're out there and fighting for? In particular, a guy like Justin Fields, who I think was influential and critical in getting the Big Ten to revisit their decision and to potentially play. I don't know. I mean, so yeah, you hit a little bit of a buzz topic with me, because it is frustrating to see how the sport is covered, and in particular with guys that will go right back to just like writing about college football as if they're covering it normally, and then they'll throw just a haymaker article out there about how we shouldn't be doing it. It's just wild.
Thank you for, like, I have been, obviously, I was fired up about the Nick Saban reaction, because, you know, the SEC now, let's use the SEC as an example. The SEC has had 28 games scheduled in the first 4 weeks of their season, and they have played 26. If you were objectively talking with someone back in August and you had said, hey, the SEC is going to try to play an all-conference schedule, first 4 weeks of the season, they're going to schedule 28 games, I think they're going to be able to play 26. Everybody would have been like, man, that's pretty remarkable. That's pretty incredible. Good for them.
But also, also go a step further, right? Go a step further in terms of, like, listen, there will, you know, tell them, like, yeah, there are going to be positives throughout. They're going to be high profile positives, excuse me. But nobody is hospitalized, and no one's even had severe symptoms.
Right.
Like, that's the other part, right? Like, that's the underlying. We all just want to talk about postponements and positive tests and this and that, as if that's the bar.
Right. Like, I agree. I mean, the entire process of a positive test being a big story is, to me, a flaw of the way we talk about sports in a COVID era, because, thankfully, the number of athletes or coaches that have had significant issues from a COVID positive test is right now zero, right? I mean, that's not like me.
And we should all celebrate that.
That's right. It's not me trying to be hyperbolic. Like, literally, for people who are playing college football or the NFL this fall or coaching it, we haven't had a single issue with somebody testing positive and having a severe health-related issue associated with it. And so,
let's all hope that that continues,
obviously.
But here's the next point. This is not used as a point to win an argument. This is not used as a point to win favor. This is used as a point to hopefully shape our narrative moving forward. This is what drives me so nuts, Clay, is that what data should do in all walks of life is shape the narrative moving forward, shape the policy moving forward. So the fact that we've had positives and postponements and everything, yes, that should shape how we continue to follow protocols and go about our business in college football. But the fact that as of now, we have had zero significant issues at all as far as the health impact on any individual in college football should also shape the narrative and the policy moving forward, meaning continue to put one foot in front of the other, be patient, follow protocols, and proceed with the season. It doesn't mean, so I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, everything that has happened this year should put us in a place where we do not get to a sky is falling scenario. So when you read an article like that, or when you hear a take that is sky is falling, immediately discard it, folks, okay? Because those that are following the sport rationally via the data will tell you that everything is being done right now incredibly well. It is an incredibly successful season, all things considered, as of today.
We're talking to Joel Klatt, Fox's lead college football analyst. I built on that a little bit. I want to circle back because I talked a lot about this. How do people who are writing these, oh my God, these, you know, what I call fear porn, like the sky is falling stories, you hit on it too, but I tweeted about this. Monday through Friday, it's like the sky is falling. There's no way we can play. Oh, my God. Nick Saban tested positive. Oh, my God. They're having to move the Vanderbilt-Missouri game in Florida against LSU and all these things. And then on Saturday, Sunday, it's like they stop the charade there, go to a game, write and talk about it as if nothing is different. And my thing is, like, how can you spend Monday through Friday trying to terrorize everybody? And then Saturday and Sunday, you go cover a college football game or you go cover an NFL game and tweet and talk and write about it as if it's no different than any other year. It's like the cognitive dissonance there. I don't understand how it's not more readily apparent to the people who are doing it. But for fans out there, I think that they certainly see it. They're like, if you think it's too dangerous, which it isn't, but if you think it's too dangerous to play football, then isn't it too dangerous for you to travel and go cover a football game? Like, the lack of consistency, the hypocrisy drives me crazy.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. And it negates the weight of their words from Monday through Friday.
That's right.
As if they're right there covering the game because people are saying, well, listen, if you weren't just trying to be high, or if this is exactly how you feel, then you should not be in a press box.
That's right.
Period.
And you certainly shouldn't be traveling.
I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. Which, by the way, and here's the other part of this. If that's how you feel, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Right? Like, that's the beauty of our country, is, like, if that's your position, that's perfectly fine. But that doesn't mean that everybody has to follow your position. And I find it very interesting that they use their platform to push that type of fear and then are traveling around the country, sitting in press boxes, covering the sport that they're saying shouldn't exist right now. It doesn't make any sense to me. It really doesn't. And, you know, it's obviously frustrating. But I will tell you this. I'm really thankful for the hard work that all the medical professionals have put in to keeping everybody safe and healthy through college football. We're learning a lot every single day. And that's what Greg Sankey will tell you. That's what Bob Bowlesby will tell you. That's what everyone will tell you, is that we continue to learn a ton every single day, whether via the antigen testing or the PCR testing or the protocols within all of these teams and individual programs. One of the things that they're learning is that, you know, the hardest thing for them to deal with right now, did you know, and this is fascinating, the hardest thing for them to deal with, it's not even getting kids to not be like quote-unquote regular college kids. It's when families come to town for home games. The hardest thing programs are dealing with. That's where that's, Clay, imagine that, right? Like, I've had four different head coaches tell me that their biggest fear in regards to COVID is not the severity of COVID on their players, but just the disruption to the, obviously, the season and everything and the life of these players individually. And where they're getting it is when their parents come to town for home games, or their family comes to town for home games.
I wouldn't have thought about it, but it makes total sense. I mean, your parents come to town, you go eat dinner with them or whatever, you know, you meet with them in the hotel the night before or after the game. I mean, you want to see, you know, mom and dad want to see their kids, right?
That's right. Right.
Brothers and sisters,
and
everything
like,
else.
All of these coaches are like, you know, I was really fearful of traveling, and I realized that traveling is the best bubble we have. We clean the plane, we clean the buses, we're around each other, we've all been tested, and we don't see anybody else on the road. It's like, it's a great bubble for us to be on the road. At home is where I get nervous.
We're talking to Joel Klatt, Fox's lead college football analyst. All right, let's go into the games themselves. Alabama.
Yeah.
Just in the second half, shut down Georgia. I mean, yeah. it was something to see, and I know there were some controversial calls and everything else, but Alabama's offense, I mean, Joel, I wrote about this in my starting 11 column. If you think about Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, and the guys that they have got now that are, you know, Waddle and how talented they are, I think there's an argument to be made that the Alabama last year receiving core is maybe the greatest receiving core that has ever existed in the history of football, college or NFL. Like, there are no NFL teams with four first rounders. Devontae Smith obviously is the other one. Nobody has that, right? I mean, to think about how good they are, and as good as Georgia is defensively, and eventually they just couldn't cover those guys for the entirety of the game. Who can cover them, or are we just headed for, you know, what looks like a 73-point Clemson where you're going to have to score 50 points to win the title, and Alabama and Clemson are just going to be standing there like throwing full-on punches at each other?
So I've got a lot of different answers, and I hope that they're all good, but they're all very different to this, you know, this topic, because it wasn't, you know, Clay, it's not even really a question as much as a topic, right?
Okay, yeah, right.
So, Let me start first with like an overarching, like, I believe that in order to win a national championship, you're going to have to get into and win a shootout against another team that has five-star athletes as well.
Yep.
And so that, I think that is the new modern college football. Okay, so here's the next layer of that. Saban realized that against Deshaun Watson. Right, like,
yep.
He learned that lesson, that he couldn't go out there and just muscle his way defensively and run game and all this stuff to a national championship anymore. So he realized, well, okay, we're going to have to go out there and change our offense a little bit, and they've done that to an unbelievable degree, as you mentioned. Georgia is 3 years behind on the learning curve, right? Like, they have a team that, pre-Deshaun Watson, could have won a national championship. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
okay,
look, the only thing I would say a little bit different is they did win the shootout game in the Rose Bowl against Baker, remember, when they had a pretty explosive offense that year. I think they both scored 50 or whatever. But, yes.
Now, here's the difference, though. The difference being is that you're going to have to play and win a shootout against a team that also has a good defense. Like, I wouldn't categorize that Oklahoma team as a good defense.
That's a good point.
That Georgia offense was able to win a shootout against that Oklahoma team. I'm talking about like a really good Clemson team, a really good, you know, LSU or Alabama, where you're going to have to get into, can you score 45 or close to 50 against a top 15, 20 defense?
Yeah.
Right? Like that's
which is
really
what Bama
tough.
Just
Oklahoma
did,
team.
Right? That's what Bama
Correct.
Just did
that's
to Georgia.
That's
yeah.
exactly right. Now, on a flip side of this, you talked about the wide receivers, and you're 100% accurate about the unbelievable core of wide receivers.
Four first rounders that they had last year, and the two of them they still have this year with Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle.
And think about this, the only year that they haven't gone to the playoff.
Yeah.
I would argue, and I have for a long time, and even as a quarterback, this might be a little bit heresy, but great wide receivers never win you championships. They're flashy and they're great. Name a Super Bowl champion whose best player was a wide receiver.
Yeah, Jerry, this is such a fun like bar debate, but to me, Jerry Rice probably is the closest, and I know you had Montana and everything else
but
associated
Montana's
with that.
But Montana's like a top two,
yeah,
three
right.
quarterback
that's,
of all
that's,
time.
That's
right?
why I don't so think you like, can make that argument. I think you're right. I mean, the team to win the Super Bowl, their best player has never been a wide receiver. I mean, I think that's, you know, in 50, whatever it is, 54 years of Super Bowls, I think there's a strong argument that's true.
So I would always say that, like, hey, it's amazing to have great wide receivers. I just don't think that they can be your strength. Last year, what ended up hurting Alabama was the fact that their defense just was not quite good enough. They started to get, you know, banged up at quarterback. Like, these more important areas, in particular, like defensive line, I thought that they didn't play as well as they had in the past. This year, I think that they're better in those areas. And while their defense has been criticized, in particular after that Ole Miss game, I thought that second half was really impressive, very impressive. So to me, if they are to win a national championship this year, they might have to do that because or they might have to do that via great wide receiver play, but I still don't think that you can just offense your way to a championship. And Oklahoma has proven that, because right now, if you actually look at the metrics, and I've studied some of the analytics with what Alabama is doing offensively, because it's so significant and so amazing. But right now, you know, they're about like what 2018 Oklahoma was. Like, Oklahoma's played offense at this level before. LSU just played offense at this level before. And it's going to take a little bit more to win a national championship, at least in my estimation. And that's why it's so important that they've got Najee Harris, who I think is tremendous. Their offensive line is very good. And it's going to be important that their defense continue to play well as well.
We're talking to Joel Klatt. All right, so with all that being said, would you be very surprised if Clemson and if Alabama were not in the playoff based on what you have seen from those two teams so far?
I would be shocked. Now, who knows what happens with COVID? I mean, yeah. I'd probably be more shocked if Clemson wasn't there, just because the ACC is not even close to Clemson.
Right.
Right. I mean, we saw that in the Miami game. Notre Dame's not going to be close to Clemson. And who knows with the thing about it is, like, in a COVID year, you get the wrong guys testing, you know, getting a positive test on the wrong week. And Ole Miss just proved that, like, hey, Ole Miss can offensively play with Alabama for a little while or most of the game. Georgia can be right there. So because of the strength of the league in the SEC, I would say that I'm not 100% that Georgia's going to go to the playoff, but I'm damn close. I mean, I'm that 98%, 99%.
All right, last question for you, and we're talking to Joel Klatt. We'll talk to him again next week, and I know you're excited to have the game Nebraska-Ohio State with the Big Ten coming back. I'm kind of toying around with a thesis theory that because they're all conference games pretty much in the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten. Well, actually, I got a couple more questions because I actually want to get into this testing thing. So actually, can you come back with this and close out a segment here?
Yeah.
We'll bring Joel back and finish out the hour. This is Outkick. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
All right, so I told you that I had a theory, Joel. My theory is this. In the NFL, we know that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are really good. We saw that the Bucs really just took it to them Sunday afternoon. Fantastic game, Brady versus Rodgers. Even Packer fans out there, none of them are sitting around like, oh my God, our season's over, we're no good. In fact, the Packers are still one of the top favorites to win the Super Bowl. That's because every week in the NFL, it's a cliche, But there's not that much of a difference between the best team in the NFL and the worst team in the grand scheme of things. In college football, there often is. And one way that takes place is when you have non-conference games and you start to break down everything in a non-conference, typically one team is a lot better than the smaller school teams they might be playing against. We're doing away with those. ACC, Big 12, Big 10, SEC, Pac-12, it's all conference games. And so I'm starting to see wild outcomes, but I think it's because we're playing so many more conference games that, much like you just saw with what happened with Green Bay getting run by Tampa Bay, there's more variety of outcome because there's no breathers, right? There's no opportunity for a team to be like, oh, you know, we're playing against whatever it is, you know, Southeast Missouri State. We know that we're going to win this game barring a total collapse. Every game you have to get up because there's not that much that separates you. Do you buy that into being an issue here in college football this year?
Yeah, I think it's almost every year, too, though, you know, so I don't know if it's specific to this year as much as it is.
A lot of teams, I guess, what I'm saying, in the SEC, you basically have three games that you try to buy a win on, right? And now those don't exist, and it's like the intensity every single week is just got to be at a high level, the same way it is in the NFL. And it's not there, and one team just hits a lot better or performs a lot better, then it sort of gets exposed.
Well, I think that in every league, you've got the 80-10-10 theory of group dynamics, and I'm sure you're somewhat familiar. I think you've got 10% that are great. I think you've got 10% that are awful, and then everybody else sits in the 80%, right?
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And the group dynamics, the theory is in leadership, like in a team environment, or if you're out there and you've got a team of people in your work, basically the 80% are going to follow whoever the more influential 10% is. So you don't want, you know, you call them the positive leaders in the 10% or the turds. You don't want to follow the turds, right? So, and I think that every league has that as well. And when you play games within the 80%, anybody can beat anybody on any given week. And I think we're seeing that. That's where, like, the Tennessee-Kentucky game was an 80% game. Like, that could have gone either way. I don't think I would have been all that surprised if it would have gone big for Tennessee the other direction. I think that is to your point. Now, I would also say this, is that in college football, see, football is football regardless of level. But in college football, we tend to want definitive narratives every single game, right? Like in the NFL, we allow the season to take place
and we allow teams to play multiple times too, right? Like you can play the same, like in college football, we have this illusion that whatever happened once is going to happen every time they play. Whereas in the NFL, it's like, oh, we understand, right? Because you play three different divisional opponents twice, and the difference between those two games is often seismic, right? But in college football, it's like, oh, whatever happened this one time is going to happen 100 consistent times.
Yeah, and we want those definitive narratives, right? And we want, you know, the black and white. And to some degree, it's a problem with our playoff system and the way we crown a champion, is because we want it to be subjectively definitive. And because of the way that football works, it just can't be. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting paradigm.
All right, so last question for you. You have got the Ohio State game in the Big Ten this weekend for Fox. We've seen, obviously, we started off talking about this, the positive tests and how it's impacting the ability to play. And in particular, Nick Saban kind of hit at some of the flaws in this because he tests positive, and then he has five more tests that all prove that's negative, right? And so what do you think is going to happen with the Big Ten? How is their testing going to go, given the fact that they don't really have any bye weeks built in, I don't believe? How is that going to play out in the event some teams might not be able to play? What are you hearing about testing in the Big Ten?
Well, you know, they outsmarted themselves right into a position where they're really behind the eight ball, right? Because they didn't do or try to do what the Big 12 or the SEC or the ACC was doing and have the opportunity for flexibility, now they're in a position where they're going to be up against it. You know, they're not going to have postponements. They're going to have cancellations because they don't have those bye weeks. And guess what? That's going to happen. I just want, like, I'm preparing everybody right now. It's going to happen, and we should all just be prepared for it. Let's hope it's not some of the biggest games, but it's going to happen in the Big Ten. A couple of things is One, their self-applied policy where a player is an automatic 21-day basically out if he tests positive is going to do unthinkable damage to this schedule, right? Like, and there was no reason to do this outside of the fact that they wanted to provide some extra level of, I don't even know what you call it, protocol, safety protocol, that would, I think, back up the reasoning for why they canceled in the first place. See, I don't think they could have, in their mind politically, and just from a perception standpoint, I don't think that they could come back and be like, well, we're just doing the same thing that the other leagues are doing, because people would be like, why didn't you do this from the start? Why did we have the whole cancellation? So I feel like they felt pressure to do something above and beyond in terms of a procedure or protocol for their season, which is why you've got this player test positive. He's out 21 days. It's incredible, 21 days.
Yeah.
So what they're, and I quote on this now from Big Ten people, what they're terrified of are now these positive antigen tests that Saban have proved can be false positives.
Yeah.
They don't feel like they're going to have the time to test out of it, in particular, if it's a player, maybe if it's a coach, but if a player tests positive, they just don't feel like they're going to have the ability to test them out of that protocol. They're going to go into the 21 days, the clock is going to start, and that's going to wreak havoc on their schedule.
And it's not only, and what's frustrating is, it's not only the teams that may be in the mix, right? It's a team that might not be in the mix at all, but they screw up all the schedules for everybody else, right? What you're learning here is there's a great deal of interconnectivity, whether you're the NFL or whether you're college football.
That's exactly right. And by the way, if you're a coach in the Big Ten and you test positive, you're in a CDC-oriented 10-day quarantine, but a player has to do 21 days. So make sense of that.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just absolute madness. Having said that, I am ecstatic that the Big Ten is going to be back. I'm even willing to sit and listen to you call a game. That's how ecstatic I am to have everybody playing in college football. And fingers crossed the Big Ten is going to be able to get it done, because I would like to see, I mean, but to be honest with you, I feel like Alabama, I feel like Clemson, I feel like Ohio State. We've almost got three that we feel pretty good about just in terms of overall talent. And maybe Georgia's that fourth. I'm not sure exactly, but I can't wait to find out.
I can't either. And you're the only guy in America that I wish wouldn't watch our show.
That is Joel Klatt. We will talk to him next week. Have a fantastic week, my man.
See you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.